I'm Mark Gagan, and you're listening to the Voice of Insurance podcast, produced in association with Advantage Go. Pick and choose your own best-of-breed insurtech and data providers with Advantage Go's ecosystem. Today's guest has one of the biggest jobs in the London market. Kate Markham is CEO of Hiscox London Market, and the last time we spoke, she just brought her business unit through a remediation strategy that was beginning to bear fruit. 18 months later, and the results have been stellar. Today, the best are looking to invest and grow and get out on the front foot and lean into the opportunities that a still very strong market has to offer. And this podcast is all about that. This is a business very much looking to the future. Our conversation came about because Hiscox had been one of the first to experiment with artificial intelligence to help speed up and enhance the lead underwriting process. And so I wanted to dig right into the detail of what Kate and her teams had done and what the results have been like. So we spend much of this discussion going deep into this and examining where the next steps are going to lead. It's a very heartening and positive message. Underwriters aren't going to be out of a job because they'll be freed up to add real value in the assessment of risk and to enhance the service that they give brokers and innovate to improve the relevance and quality of the cover that they can give their ultimate customers. The emergence of fully connected digital value chains is also going to make it much easier for a larger share of world business to access the London market. After all, if underwriters make it really simple to send something to London and turnarounds are almost instant, why wouldn't many more brokers seek quotes? Kate's full of energy and enthusiasm, and our conversation is fun and rattles along at a fast pace. Kate is also one of those leaders who has the gift of instilling confidence in the people they come into contact with, and this podcast put a spring in my step about the quality of the London market's future if it can grasp the unique opportunities it is currently presented with. I got a lot out of this chat. And I think you will too. Enjoy the podcast. Kate, welcome back to the Voice of Insurance.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here again.
Well, it's fantastic. You've got new offices. And there's a lovely view. We're looking out over the slightly grey day in the city, but we can see a long way. But the reason why I've got you back on the podcast was there was something quite eye-catching that you put out in the media a couple of months ago now, probably 3 months ago even. Yeah, it was quite an eye-catching collaboration with Google about enhancing lead underwriting using AI. So why don't you tell us all about it?
So when we were together last time, I talked about investment in lead underwriting. There's a lot going on in the market from a lead and a follow perspective. And I said at the time that we were 100% focused on lead. And in Q4, we ran a 10-week proof of concept with Google Cloud to see what we could do in terms of leveraging the power of AI to improve the way we underwrite from a lead perspective. So it was great. We took Sabotage and Terror, predominantly because it's actually one of the more simple classes that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And we thought that gave us the platform to deliver something really tangible in that short time frame, having not done it before. And the results were really great. We were able to take a process that typically takes 3 or more days and reduce it to 3 minutes. So a lot quicker to get from that initial email submission through to quote.
So it's about extracting the information that the broker's sending to you. Say something, it's like a renewal, being able to look at the different schedules, look at the different coverages, what's in, what's out, that kind of thing.
Exactly that. It's starting with the email submission. It's saying what's in the email, what information's been provided to me, what attachments are in there, unpacking that, and then being able to look at those schedules of values that come with the terrorism risk, to be able to plot those, manage the aggregations around them, do what we call the blast zone analysis, and then have a look at the contract. So the
slip. And that's sort of dividing that portfolio of buildings up into, I suppose, an infinite number of 250-meter bomb blast areas.
It's exactly that. So it's taking this client's set of risks or set of properties, plotting them on a map and saying, where are they? And how do they overlay on the clients that we already are insuring? And if there was to be a bomb, we look at how much damage we would be sort of insuring within a 250-meter radius.
And of course, that's now fitting that into your existing portfolio of things, of other buildings that you've also insured. And presumably, if this is a US risk, you know, you're talking about Midtown, Downtown, Manhattan, Central Chicago in the loop and other places.
It's exactly that. So can we insure this client? What does this client's set of properties, what does that do to our existing portfolio? How do we price it? And then let's do that all very, very, very quickly and return a quote to the client.
And then that will be then sent off to the ratings engine again, so you get the price.
Yeah, so we have built the pricing engine in the cloud, and that's linked in via what we call an API, so that's all automated as well.
So even though this is an email process, it's a few clicks, a bit of extraction, just double checking what's going on, and then you can send the quote back almost by return of email.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to be able to do it whilst the broker's on the phone, and we think that's achievable. So you can be chatting to the broker on the phone, the email's arrived in your inbox, and then whilst you're asking them how their weekend's been, what they've been up to, you've been able to model that risk, price that risk, and then you can say, hey, I've got a price for you. Here we go. And you can do that all in a fraction of minutes. The difference really from where we are today is normally you'd be saying, thank you. Let me take that away. Let me have a look at that over the next few days, and I'll come back to you at the end of the week.
And suppose you get a bit of the broke from them, don't you? Say, well, it's renewals expiry. Nothing's really changed apart from five buildings that we haven't told you about.
Yeah, but we need to know, and we need to look at that because we need to know exactly where we're insuring buildings.
And I suppose, could this then be automated further? If that was a broker that was particularly tech savvy, because we're still talking about an email with a couple of quite old-fashioned attachments, the classic spreadsheet, the Word document with a slip or something, then you have to cleanse. Do you think that could be something that, if it was a broker you did a lot of business with, could it be to the point where you wouldn't need that discussion at all, that it literally would all be done electronically?
Yes, definitely. And that's the way the market is going. So what we need for that to happen is we need upfront, so the broker piece, the client piece, to be coming in digitally. And that's where Blueprint 2 comes in, and where we talk about core data record. And that's about having the clean data coming in. What we trialed in Q4 was very much what we have today, which is an email with spreadsheets attached to that email.
So something's genuinely practical because it's actually working. We can be idealistic about what's going to happen next year or the year after, but this is actually
right
here. How do risks come in today?
Today.
In today's imperfect world.
Exactly. And not asking the broker to change what they do today, whilst we all work together to try and move the market forward in terms of modernization. But yes, it will be better in the future. But for now, this is just taking standard emails.
And what's the results been like?
The results have been great. I mean, it's only a proof of concept, so it's not live. But we were really excited by the outcome of that. So as I said, we think we can now quote whilst a broker's on the phone. So in a matter of minutes. The key thing for us really is around implementing it now and seeing what that business case looks like. Having done this in the past, so I think we talked in the press release about something called Halo, which is our model that automatically cleans the schedules of values. When we implemented that a couple of years ago, what we found is that paid for its own build costs within less than 12 months. And now that is pure cost saving every single year on an ongoing basis.
And is that just in pure expense or just time delay and labor?
Labor, yeah. We're buying for an outsourced service sitting in India at the moment, and we just don't need to send those schedules of values to that outsourced provider anymore. We can just do it automatically in-house in a fraction of seconds.
So this is more about administrative burden removal rather than adding underwriting skill, would you say?
It is. It's about freeing the underwriters up to do the things that they're actually trained to do. So if you sit down with an underwriter and say, would you like to cleanse a schedule of values? The answer is no.
No, you're right. Would you and get someone else to do that?
Exactly. So let's get someone. And we do. We don't ask our underwriters to do that today. Hence why that's been outsourced. But, you know, do you want to read these documents? Do you want to summarize this email? Do you want to do those type of tasks? Would you like to plot locations on a map? They're not jobs that underwriters want to do. They want to be spending their time on where they can add significant value, underwriting more complex risks. And this process frees them up to do that.
Sorry to interrupt in mid-flow, but this is just a reminder that you could be advertising right here, right now, and getting your message directly into the ear of key decision makers in the insurance industry. And you'll be doing it while they're absolutely in listening mode. The podcast is the medium of the future, and so is audio advertising. Contact me on mark@thevoiceofinsurance.com, and I'll do everything I can to get you started.
So now you started with something that's relatively straightforward. Are you planning to roll it out across the portfolio, I presume?
Yes, we are. Absolutely. So plan A is we're moving on to the D&F market. So, you know, if you take sabotage and terrorism, many of the things that we built in that proof of concept are immediately relevant to the more complex class that we call major property D&F. You're thinking about emails. You're thinking about schedules of values. You're thinking about plotting it on a map. You're thinking about understanding the aggregation of the values of those buildings. And then you're looking to price it and then return an email to the broker. So that's all immediately relevant. So we're going to move on from sabotage and terrorism and apply the same capabilities in the more complex class of D&F. But given the success of the pilot, what we've actually done is we've now spun up an additional squad. So we implement change through Hiscox. We have squads that deliver the capabilities. We've actually spun up an additional squad, And that squad is running in parallel with the work we're doing from a D&F perspective to say, how can we take these capabilities and roll them out across all classes where they're relevant? So reading emails, comparing contracts, that's relevant really to every class of business. So we're doing that as fast as we can.
And how far does this penetrate your own organization? For example, say in that sabotage and terror, does that aggregate things into your own outwards reinsurance and sort of look at the treaty implications of taking another big building in Midtown Manhattan, for example?
So not yet, but who knows? We'll see what happens over the next few years. There's a lot to do. I mean, we underwrite 18 classes of business, and I think the potential for this across all of those 18 classes is great.
So it's all about looking at that aggregation, looking at all those accumulations and all the things an underwriter might get worried about.
Exactly, yes.
What about things like casualty? Obviously, you don't need to plot casualty on a map necessarily. Presumably, that's sort of, well, property first and then things that are less tangible later.
Yeah, I mean, casualty is similar but different. So you're right, we don't need to plot them on a map, but we are pulling in third-party data to inform our underwriting. We do want to speed that underwriting process. So we want to make sure that we're automating the manual tasks. So receiving of emails, unpacking of emails with attachments, that's something that's very relevant to casualty. We'd like to have automated pricing, which is something that's absolutely relevant to casualty. So the way we're looking at it when we think about more of the complex risks is what we're calling augmented underwriting. And this is distinctly different to what we call algorithmic underwriting. So algorithmic, to me, is straight through end to end with an algorithm that's sort of doing the underwriting, the selection of the risk, the pricing of the risk, et cetera, and straight through in one process. Where we're dealing with more complex classes, and this is true for casualty, we're saying more, let's take our existing underwriting process, which has got a number of steps in it, some of which are quite manual, and how do we speed up or remove those manual components of that journey so that the underwriters are quicker and things are presented to them in an easily digestible form, and then they can do the clever bit, which is really apply their brain to the understanding of the risk, whether we want to write that risk and how we're going to price it appropriately.
So do you think more complex applications rather than something that's simple that has a rating engine that is quite straightforward, where there's a bit more nuance around pricing, would it be that the AI is going to be presenting someone, I think the pricing should be within a range, and then you leave that for the underwriter to decide what to put up to the broker, for example?
Yeah, I mean, the pricing models will always tend to deliver a price, and then the underwriter will look at that. And there may be nuances around an individual risk that the pricing model hasn't quite captured. And that's where the underwriter intellect's going to come in and say, actually, I think on this one, I need to do something a little bit different. So you know that you've covered all your core bases from a pricing model perspective, but there might be something that you've read in that submission that just says, okay, this one's a bit different.
I'm sure it's fine if the market will support a price in excess of whatever the machine is saying, that's fine. What about if the underwriter wants to, says, well, I think the machine's spitting out a price that's completely uncompetitive. Can I override it? And
yeah, I mean, absolutely. The key thing when we've said it all along is the human needs to stay in chain. So to us, AI, digital, data, automation, whatever you want to call it, is all to help the underwriter, but the underwriter makes a decision. And that's something that we absolutely believe in. So whether the price is too high, too low, whether it's a risk we want to write or not, the models and the processes are there to help and support, but they're never going to make the decision.
And presumably you'll be ingesting all this thing through the digital placing platforms that are out there, the PPLs and the white spaces, that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just down to whichever the way the broker wants to interact.
Yes. So some of them come directly via email, some of them come via PPL, some come via white space, and I'm sure there'll be other platforms in the future.
Yeah.
But yes, to us, we're trying to be agnostic in terms of how the risk arrives at us. And what we're focusing on is once we've got it, how do we make sure we're as efficient as we possibly can in selecting that risk, pricing and underwriting that risk, and then returning it? And ultimately, we'll be returning it to the digital form of Lloyd's through what is called digital gateway. Yeah. But we want to make sure that our bit is super slick and efficient, and the underwriters are freed up to spend their time and use their brains where they can add a huge amount of value.
Say I'm a sabotage and terrorism underwriter and lucky enough to go out and visit a client for a day, and my inbox is obviously rattling away, and I've been too busy interacting with that client to be able to look at my emails. Do you think there could be a method of AI to triage when I come back the next day and I've got 50 submissions to have a look at? Is there a way that the AI might be able to say, well, these are the ones in order that I think are the best. This one's the most in appetite, and I think we can be competitive on this. And so you might as well see that one first, and then we'll move down and say, these are the ones we're less competitive on, but they're really good risks. And then these are the ones that I think the risks that we don't really want and probably won't be that competitive, but we need to put out a quote.
service the market and service that broker.
Yeah, definitely. So we classify our appetite in terms of love, like, might, probably won't, definitely won't. And absolutely, AI can help us with that. So risk can come in, we can triage that risk, we can say, that's something that is categorically out of appetite for us. So let's be quick, let's be efficient, let's let the broker know that's not one for us. That's actually really helpful for them and for us. On the other hand, something comes in, it's in the love category. Great. Let's put that at the top of the list of things that our underwriters are going to look at. And let's make sure we prioritize that one because we think that's sweet spot. That's something we should be really competitive of and we want to be really quick on it. So excellent. Yes, all possible.
You don't want to miss a good risk just because you weren't quick enough to quote on it.
Yes, exactly. That's all about making sure we spend our time on the right things.
I used to be broken. Brokers, we always think that when we look at this fragmented market, we think, well, it's the brokers are all consolidating. They're the ones that seem to pull the strings. You know, it's the underwriting that's fragmented and it's the brokers that are in control. Do you think that they're going to be investing as much in AI as you are? And what might be the consequences of that? Well, they'll know all your loves and likes and things and be sort of reverse engineering everything you do.
I mean, I think that's great. I think it will be win-win-win. Win for the client, win for the broker, and win for the underwriter.
Yes, there's nothing worse than being a broker, wasting your own time, realizing that you didn't know that the underwriter you've spent hours trying to see didn't actually do what you did.
Exactly. And I think that's something we've seen through COVID. We've seen a lot more risks just being sent out to everybody on PPL. You know, just we'll blanket email people, whether that's something they do or they don't do. And I think that's where we can all help each other. But I was just saying, this is where we play.
The big complaint during COVID was from underwriters was saying, I've just been sort of spammed by people and I don't know where to start. And
yeah, it's hard.
And I suppose if the broker wasn't wasting their time, i.e. that they had their own priority kind of A-list, let's have an A-list of people to send this to and have a B-list. If the A-list say no and then a C-list, then we won't waste anyone's time and we'll streamline our own processes as well.
And the ultimate is if it's not coming in via email, but actually you're getting clean data in via an API that is plugged straight into our systems and we can look at that. We don't have to spend the time cleansing it, verifying it, adding to it. It's just straight in.
I wonder if it was a really progressive broker that actually had the client's risk manager sitting there, viewing the bits that they're allowed to look at and then actually be able to hit the buy button.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also for clients, another benefit is once we start to digitize the client data as it comes in, think about a renewal process. Instead of having to go through the whole process again, it will be, okay, let me have a look at what information you've got stored on me. What's changed? What do I need to add? What do I need to edit? And apart from that, push it through and renew the risk. So I think it will be much more streamlined from a client perspective in the future.
It sounds like underwriters are going to have plenty of work. They're not going to be out of a job.
I don't think so. No. I think underwriters are going to be doing a more interesting job. I think we've worked really hard over the last sort of 10 or 15 years to try and remove the sort of manual tasks from underwriters. And hence we've outsourced a number of those sort of core processes to free them up. But this is the next stage in that journey, isn't it? Because typically those outsourced processes are not things that get turned around in seconds, they get turned around in days. And actually, it's much better for an underwriter if you can say, yes, I've got you on the phone and I can say, yes, right now, here's my price. Would you like my terms? The future of this, I think in the way it will go, is to be able to use AI to really understand much more complex documents. So think about survey reports that will come through on a major property account. You might have 900 locations across the world. There might be hundreds of survey reports that are attached to that email. We can't possibly read all of those in the time that it's expected for us to turn that around. But with the power of AI, we can do that. So those are the things that are really exciting us at the moment.
Yes, I remember being in that position. And yeah, let's be fair, we've got time to really pour over the top location, that the one that's going to hurt me. I'm interested in how they've got to the PML of that one and whether that, I think that's a realistic thing, because that might be very pertinent to how that program's been structured. For example, but otherwise, yeah, I mean, all the other things, how would I know? But of course, it could be the one that's 50th down on the bottom of the schedule. It's still worth a lot of money and it could cause
could
a very
wrong.
Large loss. And it may be that just, yeah, it's yes. substandard.
Yeah.
So if you had an AI flagging that up, it would be pretty useful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Certainly, underwriters never asked me questions about anything that was on the 49th on the schedule. Well, if they did, then you probably wouldn't go back to them again.
It's too painful.
Too painful for everybody, yes. You mentioned before that certainly in terms of labor saving, these things have paid for themselves, they tend to pay for that cost. What do you think is the real win for this? Would it be productivity of an underwriter, ultimately? Because the underwriter is probably better paid than the person doing that grunt work.
I mean, I would put it into three categories. Do more, do it better, do it cheaper. So do more, we've touched on this, free the underwriters to either spend their time on more complex risks or more business development or more portfolio analysis. You've got a really, really good understanding of the risks that you're on the hook for. So that's in the do more category. I think the do it better, we've got an opportunity here, as you've just been touching on, to understand everything that we're insuring. So to model the entire portfolio, which is going to give us a much better understanding of the overall portfolio, but also from a risk selection point of view, what's in there? How do we optimize that? How do we improve that over the years? So I think there's a real opportunity for us to do it better and to have a better understanding from a loss ratio perspective by having more comprehensive view of the entire portfolio.
Yep.
I think on the do it cheaper, what we're doing is we're taking out either the processes which we've outsourced so we can save money on that front, or we're just not using humans for the low value added task, which means for the simple task will be quicker and cheaper.
I just came from a seminar this morning where John Neal said that Lloyd's could double in size. He didn't give exact time frame, but it didn't mean doubling size in, you know, a very long period. I mean, a relatively short period. Do you think, is that a realistic expectation of this kind of automation?
I think so. I mean, I've always said, our view, we sit in London, we're 100% in Lloyd's. We need to ask ourselves, why would a client choose to send a risk to London? And I think there are three reasons or three potential answers. One, because the product's better. So do we offer better cover to the client? And that's the case in many examples. I think secondly, because we understand the risk better. So we've got better data, better insight, better knowledge and experience and understanding that risk. Or thirdly, and this is the key one in terms of the real growth potential, is because it's just as easy to send it to London. It's just as quick and just as efficient as it is to get it done locally.
Yeah, because you're probably crossing a state line anyway if it's a US risk.
I think so. And I think if we can turn it into something that we can process things really, really quickly, why would you not send it to London if you're going to get such good service? And that, to me, is the potential for the London market to grow significantly.
So with those early results, are you getting that kind of increase in productivity? Are you doubling productivity or?
Well, remember, it's only a proof of concept. We're implementing it at the moment, yeah. So we'll have to see. But I think we're excited by the potential.
Kate, last time we were speaking about, well, something that you had become famous for. You should patent it and write books about it. So self-improvement books, a 3-1-1 method. Now, 3 off the loss ratio, 1 off the expense, and 1 off acquisition costs.
Acquisition. Yes,
I'm
exactly.
Glad I remembered that. I just wrote down 3-1-1, but I've forgotten what they all meant. That's something for a remediation phase of a market. We're not in that phase. It doesn't feel to be in that phase. We're in a much more growth-orientated phase. Can you still do that when you're in a growth orientation phase? Also, has your 3-1-1 changed to anything else? I grow 3.
We have officially retired 3-1-1. I know I said to you last time that we sort of felt it was embedded in the way we think about the portfolio today. Any book of business, you can improve it. Take out your bottom 10%, add a better 10% at the top. And that lives on very much within the way we think about the underwriting within London Market. But we did retire. We retired it a year ago because we felt that that phase of remediation was behind us. And we launched a new strategy, which is called HLM Plus, that stands for Hiscox London Market Plus. And the idea behind that really was just to say, look, we've got a great core portfolio here. Now it's about how do we continue to optimize that? So 3-1-1 lives on within what we do, but how do we now add to it? So we're surrounded by a fantastic market, great opportunities, new business coming to London. How do we really step up to the plate and make the most of the opportunities around us? And that's the plus bit. So it was about saying we don't want to just churn anymore, but it's about adding to the portfolio.
What does that mean in specifics?
So, I mean, two really good examples from 2023 is stepping up where we see those opportunities. So property would be the first one. We think property was a really exciting market last year. And, you know, we very quickly put more capital on the table, deployed more capital because we think the rating environment was there, the opportunity was there, the business flow was there, and we significantly grew our property book. Second example I would give you is energy. So specifically energy construction. In 2023, we saw a lot of traditional energy construction because of the oil price, but also we saw huge inflow of renewables construction coming into the London market. And those are both opportunities where we thought we want to step up and say yes. So we actually took the decision last year to double the size of our energy team. So we split the team in half and then doubled it, if that makes sense. So we kept our traditional energy team and then we launched a separate power renewables team and doubled the resource behind those opportunities. Again, putting capital on the table and writing more business. And that saw us write onshore wind, offshore wind, hydroelectric opportunities, as well as sort of battery storage, all the things you'd expect us to be involved in. But those were new business opportunities that were flowing into London.
And again, is that you being also more proactive? You picking up the phone to the broker rather than the other way around?
Yeah, so we sit down with our key broking partners on an ongoing basis, as you would imagine, but particularly at the start of a year, we'll say, well, you know, what are your core objectives? What does success look like for you? What are we setting out to achieve? And we were really explicit about the opportunities that we saw around energy, the fact that we were investing from a resource point of view, and we were open for business. And yes, we talked to them consistently throughout that year and said, please show us the opportunities when they come to you.
Doing business in this market, since we last spoke, it was over a year ago now, a hard market came to reinsurance after much huffing and puffing, but it came in the way that it tends to in reinsurance, came quite violently when it did. Did that affect you as Hiscox? Obviously, you buy reinsurance like everybody else. Did that affect your own appetites? And did you feel that, oh goodness, were you in any way constrained by that in what you could offer onto your insurance clients?
So the short answer is no. We had a really clear plan and we were able to execute that plan. We were able to buy the reinsurance that we wanted and absolutely got that in place in time for 1/1/2023, as is going back.
I remember because I spoke to you before, it was just before that renewal.
It was.
And I think you said you were expecting prices to rise.
Yes, we so were.
I think that showed that you had done your homework, because I think there were plenty of other cedents who weren't expecting prices to rise, or certainly were unpleasantly surprised.
We'd budgeted for them. So I remember us talking about terrorism and cyber and the property cat side. And we budgeted and we absolutely got what we needed. And therefore, we were out of the gates fast from 1/1 in terms of being able to deploy and deliver against the plan. So we didn't change our plan. We were just able to execute the plan we knew.
And when you knew that the insurance market was going to be able to carry some of that extra cost, or would have to, and knowing that you've got the capacity makes you a far better partner than someone who hasn't.
Yes, we were able to step forward. As I say, we were quick out of the gates and we were able to very much step forward and say, we're here and we're open for business.
Was that more group capital allocated to you as well, rather than some of it was more net as well?
Absolutely. So if you look at our half year results, you'll see that we grew 12% from a gross perspective, but 18% from a net perspective. And that's very much us saying at this point in the cycle, we're really comfortable about retaining more from a net. And that was a core part of the plan for last year.
Eat more of your own cooking if it's particularly tasty.
Yes.
So you were out, you were ready, you weren't unpleasantly surprised, you had the capacity you needed. So what were the specific opportunities that really caught your eye in that market?
So I think we've covered them already. Really, property and energy, the two that I would hone in on. And for us, on the energy side, it was about, okay, let's resource up. So let's invest. I've got a more detailed strategy that underpins that HLM plus piece. But one of the core pillars of that, we call it invest in innovation. And the invest piece was important because that's me saying to the business, where we see opportunity, we will invest. We'll invest from a technology point of view, and we've talked about that earlier, data, digital, AI, but we'll also invest from a people perspective and make sure that we've got the right skills, the right capabilities, and the right experience in the teams to make the most of the opportunities. And that was a big commitment that we made to the business when we launched that new strategy, was to say, we're not just asking you to do more of the same. We're actually coming to you as a leadership team and saying we're prepared to invest against these opportunities.
Obviously, it's not just one market. Every class has got its own little mini cycles going on and everything else. So you've got your good ones. And what are the ones where you're less enthusiastic?
So, I mean, everyone's talking about casualty. We've been talking about it for a long time. We're very much still managing the cycle quite carefully from a casualty perspective. Cyber, we're seeing pricing is still challenging from a cyber perspective. And we've seen over the last year, we've obviously seen business leaving Lloyd's because of the imposition of the war clause. So that's something we continue to track very, very carefully. And we've adjusted our plans accordingly. From a D&O perspective, we're still seeing prices going down. But we are, in the last sort of, you know, 3-6 months, we've seen that rate of decline slow down. There's lots of declines in there, but we are seeing single digit decreases, but not the rate of decreases that we had at the beginning of 2023.
So it's not something you can be that excited about, but is it still adequate?
It is, yeah. And that was the point I was going to make. So we are still very much open for business and casualty. When we look at an individual risk, we're saying, how well do we believe this risk is rated from a technical point of view? And if it's well rated, then we're going to renew that or write it as a piece of new business. And, you know, we think those classes of business are well rated at the moment.
To go back to that HLM plus strategy, the plus, could it also be, you mentioned before, people come to London because they can sometimes get better cover than they can get in their local market, or get cover they can't get anywhere else. Is that something you want to be investing in? Obviously, in order to be able to give cover that other people are less comfortable with, you have to have invested in the knowledge to be able to be comfortable to give that cover.
Yes, absolutely. So product innovation, that's what I would call that. We've launched over the years a number of our own wordings. So flood, we've talked about flood plus, I think, in the past.
Yes.
That's a good example. That's a Hiscox wording. Kidnap and ransom is another class of business where we launched in the last 12 months a brand new wording called Hiscox Secure. And that's making sure that we're keeping up to date with how risk evolves.
You know, and of course, that's a class of business that you're completely synonymous with.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Was it a sort of 30-year anniversary of your association with Control Risk, for example?
It's
something that has always been associated with Hiscox.
It's very much part of our DNA. We're really passionate about it. But the nature of the risk under a kidnap and ransom umbrella evolves. So we're looking more at sort of online risk and extortions and all different things. And we wanted to make sure that the wording that we were offering clients was absolutely at the cutting edge in terms of the cover that they need.
No, it's interesting because you think, yes, that's something you've been doing for a long time. You think, oh, well, you've kind of done that, but it's never done.
It's never done. Sadly, in that world, things are always evolving and we need to keep a pace with it.
You're mentioning all this business coming to London, very good, very healthy flows of business into London and the excess and surplus lines market in general. Is there any sign of that wave cresting, peaking? Because it's been very good for a very long time now.
Yeah, I don't think... yet. So no, we're pretty optimistic about the next couple of years. The flow to London, in simple language for me, is really down to, can the admitted market price something adequately for the risk? And when the risk is evolving at such a rapid rate, I think it's really hard to handle in the admitted market. So be that climate change impacting property risk, be that social economic inflation impacting some of the casualty risks, they're moving so rapidly, I think it's quite hard for the admitted market to keep up where it needs to be. And therefore, that flow is going to come, I think, until things stabilise.
I suppose, yes, you can imagine trying to run our market and getting your rates approved by the FCA every time you wanted to change them.
Yeah, file them. It takes time.
File them and let them gather dust.
Yes. And, you know, the way risk is evolving at the moment, that's not the world we're living in. So I think the E&S market will remain strong.
Obviously, there's an element of cyclicality to it in terms of the hardness or the relative hardness and relative softness of the market. But do you think there's a secular element in that?
Definitely.
As well?
Yeah, of course.
Because the world's changing faster.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we are in a cycle and obviously we think we're in a good part of the cycle at the moment, although each class of business, as we've said, is in its own almost micro cycle. And I'm sure things will come down in time. But right now, generally, the flow is still strong into London.
Another thing, you mentioned casualty, and obviously it's been a feature of recent results seasons. I don't expect you to be a financial analyst of the market, but a feature of results of, say, Q4, full year 2023 results has been reserve strengthening in casualty. Is that just something that people can do because results have been very, very good and they can salt away extra reserves to use at some point when the market isn't quite so good? Or is it genuinely a cause for concern, i.e. because we've had some pretty bad years, some of those back years, and there has been some adverse development?
I think so much has been written. They're talking about 2014 to 2019, aren't they?
Yes, it's difficult. Some people say 2014 to 19, some people say 2015 to 20, and I say, let's call the whole thing off.
Probably the wisest thing to do. I mean, I can't comment on others. I think what I can say from our perspective is a couple of things. Generally, we're known for being pretty prudent from a reserving point of view, and you'll be able to see from our results, we continue to have prior year releases, which is where we want to be. I think the second thing, and again, we've published this quite widely, we've done a number of loss portfolio transfers over the last few years, and from a London market perspective, we feel our back book is well protected and that covers those key years. So we're in a good place.
Kate, is there anything I've missed? Because we've been talking about lots of different things.
I don't think so. I think maybe I should book to come back again in another year or so.
Certainly at the speed at which things are changing, it would be very prudent to do so.
I'd love to do that.
And we can't put podcasts through an API, unfortunately. All the listeners just, I don't know, did a mind meld and we'd never have to do. When we get one of those new Elon Musk chips, we may apparently never need to talk to each other again. Apparently, we just commune.
I think that would be a sad development. but for me, because last time we did this online through Zoom, I think, so it's been nicer to be traditional form, face-to-face in a room.
It's very nice. And yes, and drinking a nice cup of Hiscox coffee. Thank you very much.
Well, it's been great to see you again.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did,
Don't forget to subscribe or leave a like or a review or recommendation on whatever podcast platform you used to access this program. These really help get the word out. Before we go, just a quick reminder that advertising slots are available here and in other places in the Voice of Insurance podcasts. Podcasting is the fastest growing medium and attracts a high quality audience of key decision makers. It's also an intimate medium where you, the listener, are right in the room with me and the interview subjects. Needless to say, that means it's a great way of getting your message out directly to an audience because you know you've got their full attention. It's also very cost effective. So get in touch with Mark at thevoiceofinsurance.com to find out how you could be speaking directly to the industry. The Voice of Insurance podcast is produced in association with Advantage Go, enabling enterprise-scale underwriting through a single pane of glass. Voice of Insurance is produced by me, Mark Gagan. Music was written by Anna Gagan and produced by Carlos Gagan. Check out more podcasts and written comment pieces at www.thevoiceofinsurance.com.